Now, is anybody feeling a little bit hungry? A little bit hungry? Well, would you like a daffodil? Very good for abating the pangs of hunger. Just what you want when you're feeling a bit peckish on a Sunday morning in the service. You won't? They're very tasty, you know. Very tasty. In fact, they're absolutely yummy. Very nice. You want to try one? The only problem with them is the Welsh connection. Very nice. I don't know why people are so surprised, really. I'll tell you what. If you went home and you said to your dad, you said, you know that strange man who was standing up front where you ought to be standing, Dad? That strange man, he ate a daffodil today. What do you think your father would say? He'd say, don't be silly. The man may be a bit funny, but he wouldn't do that. I don't believe you. On the other hand, he might say, I knew he was losing his marbles. It was only a question of time before he started doing this sort of thing. But then just supposing you went home, and it wasn't just you, but it was Abby as well, and Matt, and yep, Thomas. And you all said the same thing. Do you think he might begin to believe you? And then suppose it wasn't just you and your family, it was Mum, and then the people in the row behind, and a few friends, they all turned up, about 10 or 12 of them, and they all said the same thing. Well, he'd begin to think it might just have happened. And then suppose there were 70 people who'd all seen it, and they all went up to the front door and they said, that's what happened. Or even better than that, over 500 people, imagine 500 people in this church, and they all saw this strange, retired High Court judge eat a daffodil. Who would have believed it? But 500 people say it's happened. And what's the explanation? If they're serious and honest and reliable people, why wouldn't you believe it? What other explanation can there be, however unlikely it might seem at first blush? You know, that's what they call evidence. Evidence is what people say they've seen and heard. And evidence is when someone gets into a witness box and they say this, or sometimes it's when people write down what it is that they've seen and heard. And what we have is evidence. We have very good evidence in the Bible of people who saw Jesus after he'd risen from the dead. And although at first blush you think that's very unlikely, if you know that these people are reliable in what they say, then you have to come to a conclusion. Are what they is saying correct or not? Now, some of you here in the congregation, I'm sure, will have served on juries. And you will have had to come to a conclusion about the evidence in front of you. And it's no good saying, I don't know. You have to reach a decision. Is the evidence reliable or isn't it? And that's what we have to do about the resurrection of Jesus, because we have the evidence of those who were there. It's good evidence. And what do these people see? We've heard one or two of the stories this morning of what these people saw. He was real, all right. He died. The grave was empty. And they saw the person of Jesus. Now, he was both a bit the same and a bit different. What was the same about him as you or I? Did he eat and drink? Yes, he ate and drank. Could you touch him?
Yeah.
You could touch him. But he could come through into a locked room, couldn't he? Without having to open the door. So he was a bit different. He looked much the same in some ways, because they could see all the marks of the crucifixion, the places where the nails had been, the place where the spear had gone. But he looked a bit different too. So his body wasn't quite the same as yours and mine. But that's probably what our bodies are going to be like if we believe in Jesus and die and then are raised from the dead with him. It gives us an idea. A special type of body. Physical, yes, but more than physical too. There's a list. Perhaps you can have a list, Jonathan, on the screen. We had this read to us. You see, about 25 years later, Paul wrote a list of those who had seen Jesus after his resurrection. It's not a complete list, because we know of other people who are recorded in the Gospels, particularly the ladies who were the first people to see Jesus after he'd risen again, also the two disciples on the road to Emmaus, the seven who went off fishing, and a number of other people too. But this list that Paul produces, he talks about Peter, or Cephas, as he's sometimes called. He talks about the 12. He talks about more than 500 people at one time, most of whom, he says, are still alive, though some have fallen asleep. That means they've died. But of course, for death for a Christian is just like falling asleep, because we're going to be raised with Jesus. Nothing to be afraid of, death. Falling asleep in Jesus. Marvelous, isn't it? And then someone else. The brother of Jesus, called James. And then to all the apostles. Now, we've heard about the 12 already, so I think the apostles probably means the 70 people that Jesus sent out rather earlier. And when we were totting this up yesterday with the youth club, how many did we get to? Do you remember how many it was? 585, we reckoned. At least 585 people. Somewhere between 500 and 600 people in the various lists that we know about who saw Jesus alive again. And then we read just recently, didn't we, about just now, about a particular disciple who had difficulty in believing it. And he wasn't prepared to believe what other people said they'd seen the week before. What was his name? Thomas. Yes, he was Thomas, wasn't he? Thomas. And he said, I won't believe unless what? Unless I can put my fingers into the marks in his hands and feel the side where the spear went, I won't believe. And the next week he was there with the other disciples, wasn't he? And Jesus appears again. And in case they're frightened, he says, peace be with you. And then did Thomas actually need to grab Jesus? Did he need to put his fingers there or grab his side and see where he had the spear put? No, he didn't. He didn't, because he realized that he'd been silly not to believe the evidence of the other people who had seen him. He didn't need to lay hold of Jesus. We don't need to see Jesus to believe. We need to follow the evidence of those who did. And so Thomas says, my Lord and my God, because he knew then that this was so important. The resurrection of Jesus, Jesus being raised, showed who he was. That meant he had to follow him. He was his boss. He was his Lord. He was his master, his God. Amazing story, isn't it? Jesus made it quite plain that we don't need to see him to believe. We don't need to have a vision of him. It's enough to see and hear the evidence of those who did, written down for us now in the New Testament. And so what Jesus said, and we'll have the next verse up on the screen if we may. Because you've seen me, he said to them, you've believed. But blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. What does it mean to be blessed? Anybody tell me what it means to be blessed? Quite a difficult idea. It's the opposite of being cursed. It's God showing favor to us, being kind to us, being gracious to us. We're blessed if we believe the evidence that we can follow for ourselves. And then he says, these things are written, the man who's writing this, these things are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. And by believing, you may have life in his name. The resurrection life of Jesus, that can be ours. Starting here and now and going on through death, if he is our Lord and our God. And the question is always, what are you going to do with the evidence? And Jesus does meet us as we read the evidence in the Gospels. And that's very compelling. And as I turn to the adults, I say, do it for yourself. Read a Gospel if you've never done it. Read the Gospel of John. And we've got a special booklet which makes it very easy for you to do that and to read it with someone who you know is a convinced Christian. Here's a booklet. It's called The Word One-to-One. You don't actually even have to take the Bible because it's all written out for you here. It's straightforward enough. And you read it with someone. And what we always say to people is, you only have to do one. This takes you through the Gospel of John. You start with John chapter 1. If you don't get on with it, no expectations, simply say, no, I don't want to do it again. But a lot of people have found this incredibly helpful as a way of examining the evidence. Come and see me if you'd like to do that. I can put you in touch with a Christian. If you have a friend who's a convinced Christian and you'd like to do it with them, informal, people are doing this in coffee bars, in Pret-a-Manger, in Starbucks, all over London at present. A marvellous way of getting to grips with the evidence. Not embarrassing, you just have one of these and you read it together. Follow the evidence. And if you know someone who is a Christian, they will tell you exactly the same as Paul said, that they've met with Jesus too. Because, of course, in the end, the best evidence is when you meet Jesus and can see it for yourself. Not in a dramatic way. Most Christians don't become Christians in a dramatic way. It often takes a long time to come to believe. But as you read the Gospels, so you see the evidence and you see who Jesus is, and you come to believe, and you see the difference that he makes. The center of life, the resurrection and the life, the one who makes sense of life. These things are written that you may believe that Jesus is Messiah, Son of God, and by believing, you may have life through his name. So what a great message we have on Easter Sunday. Jesus, resurrection and life.